Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. It is a Reaction Monday. Normally on Reaction Mondays, we don't have guests. But I figured that desperate times call for desperate measures around here. And last night's Predators game has, in my opinion, put them at the brink of desperation, which means Adam Vingan joins us on the program. Now, the statistics say that the winner of game one in any series has a 68% chance of winning the series, and I would assume that it's probably higher if the winning team is the road team. I think the Predators should have won last night. I thought that the Vancouver Canucks didn't even play that great of a game, and the Predators absolutely crapped it away. And so I am depressed as all get out. Vingan joins us. Vingan, let's start there. Do you have something when you watch last night's game that will make me feel better about the situation?
That's a good question. I do think that the Predators held their own for a lot of the game. I thought at 5-on-5, it was fairly even. I think, of course, the Canucks seemed to take things over in the third period, but by and large, I thought the Predators hung in there. They were in position to steal a game that, you know, not very many people thought they could win. You mentioned the statistics about when teams win game one of a series. Predators fans probably know this by now, but the Predators have never won a playoff series when losing the first game. I think they're 0-13 when you include the five-game series against the Coyotes in the bubble. They're 0-12 in seven-game series, and I looked this up earlier. There's only one team in NHL history with a worse record in seven-game series when losing game one, and that's the, I guess, soon-to-be former, or actually now officially former, Arizona Coyotes. The Coyotes were 0-13 when losing game one of a seven-game series. So Predators not quite making NHL history, but just about there. So history suggests that the Predators are not going to come back from this, but there are, I feel, a few things that they could take away from that game last night and try to build off of it.
Okay, what are some of those things?
I thought that at first, the power play was generating a lot of good looks. Now, Rick Tocchet did make adjustments, and the Predators had a hard time adjusting to those adjustments. But the power play did look good early on. They get the goal from Ryan O'Reilly. The power play has been playing better for most of the second half of the season, really when the season turned around. And I think that if they can make the adjustments to Tocchet's adjustments about how they were unable to get into the offensive zone cleanly, I think that they showed that they could generate some high quality looks on the power play. So if Andrew Brunette, who we know is a power play specialist, can make some tactical changes in game two, if the Predators get on the power play, perhaps that can change their fortunes.
So I think my biggest takeaway from last night's game that really, really bothered me, other than the fact that at the end of the day in all these games, all that matters is whether or not you win or lose them. And the Predators, you know, had that game in their hands, in my opinion. But one thing that really bothered me, you sent me the analytics last night, and the Predators lost 65% of the puck battles. And to me, I think that's a matchup thing, right? I think that's Rick Tocchet saying, oh, Tommy Novak's out there? Let's go put somebody out there that's too physical for him. Or, oh, Michael McCarron's out there? Let's go put JT Miller out there. And that scares me because I don't think, you know, I don't think the Predators have a lot of options to be able to change that. They played Tommy Novak 10 minutes last night of ice time. I mean, you can't do that. You cannot have a $3 million forward that you're expecting to be a contributor play 10 minutes of ice time because you're afraid that the other team is just going to be too physical for him in his own end. And he's terrible in his own end last night. And I just don't know how the Predators overcome that.
Yeah, that is a good question as well. And as you mentioned, JT Miller just feasted on the Predators at 5-on-5 last night. And he was mostly matched up with the McCarron line. And after the game, Rick Tocchet said that he wasn't planning it that way. It's just that he started the Miller line at the beginning of every period, and the Predators tend to start the McCarron line at the beginning of every period. So that's just how it worked out. Whether or not he was telling the complete truth, I don't know. But, you know, the fact is Miller was on the ice a lot against McCarron, and the Canucks dominated play at 5-on-5 when Miller was on the ice in general. And that's not a matchup that the Predators are going to be able to get away from on Tuesday, just because of course they don't have the last change now. When the series shifts to Nashville, they may want to look into that. But Miller to me stood out more than any other player on the ice for either team last night. He had the most scoring chances of any player on both teams. As I said, that the Canucks had a distinct territorial advantage when he was on the ice. I mean, this is a guy who scored 100 points this season. He was one of 9 players in the NHL with 100 points, but I feel like he did not get anywhere close to the same amount of fanfare that the other 100 point scorers got, like Kucherov and MacKinnon and McDavid and Matthews and Pastrnak and Panarin. But he is a preeminent power forward in the NHL, and he proved that last night. So, the other thing that came to mind to me was, although the top line combined on the power play goal, O'Reilly, Nyquist, and Forsberg,
Sure.
they did nothing at 5-on-5. And that's a problem. I mean, I think that was one thing that was coming into the series that Predators fans were perhaps nervous about, was that line during the regular season was great, but where else were they going to get that offense? I mean, one thing I think I would try to do, and I'd be curious to hear you, Jared, is I think you need to get more ice time for that Sissons line with Zucker. I mean, they scored that goal. Sissons has been there in the postseason. Zucker has been there in the postseason. I think that line should get a lot more ice time in game two than maybe they did in game one.
So I completely agree with you. One thing that bothers me about, the Predators kind of core group, right? The guys that have been here through this, the Forsbergs, Josi, Saros, Sissons, that group. I thought they were awful last night. Like, I thought they were awful. Sissons takes that stupid cross check at the beginning of the game, and immediately I'm like, oh my God. This is a veteran player that's played in 70-something playoff games in his career, and he takes a guy on the road in the first 5 minutes of a playoff game where every official's going to blow his whistle, and he freaking cross-checks the guy. And I'm just like, oh my God. I thought Forsberg was awful last night. It was like he was timid with the puck. I thought Josi was invisible, defensively, really, on both ends of it. I thought O'Reilly was fine, but he's not one of these core guys. The point I guess I'm making here is that Barry Trotz brought in guys that he labeled as serial winners, right? Ryan O'Reilly, Luke Shen, he brought in Gus Nyquist, he brought in Jason Zucker, and those are all the guys that showed up last night. O'Reilly, Shen, of all people last night, I thought killed two penalties, and he was pretty much out there clearing it himself both times. I thought Nyquist actually played pretty well in spite of that line not doing much, and Zucker obviously had the goal. Which leads me to this question, which I'm not accusing anybody of this right now, but I am worried of this, which is, could it be that that core group of guys, the Josis, the Forsbergs, the Saroses, maybe they're serial losers? Because these guys keep getting into the playoffs, and these guys keep not winning in the playoffs, and 2017 was a long time ago, and they had a lot of other guys that were core players at that time, like Rene and Subban and Fisher and James Neal, and those guys are gone. And so I like last night, the just invisibility of Forsberg, Josi, and Saros leads me to wonder, like, can I win with these guys?
Yeah, well, to your point, Forsberg, I feel like he lost the puck a lot. Like, I don't know how you can track that, but I felt like a lot of the times when he was trying to make a move, the puck got away from him. If I recall off the top of my head, Josi had one shot on goal in more than 26 minutes of ice time, which is absurd considering how important he is to generating offense. He screened Roman, excuse me, he screened Juuse Saros on the Lindholm goal, the rush goal that at the start of the second period.
Yeah, but that was Saros' fault.
Yeah, well, I mean, Josi didn't help, but it was a goal that Saros needed to save. Yes, I agree. And when you look, I mean, look, Forsberg, well, let's focus on Forsberg specifically. Now, Forsberg had, I think of 2016-17 and 2017-18. He had 16 points in both playoff years in 17 and 18. But since then, as you said, it's been quiet for Philip Forsberg in the playoffs. And considering how amazing he was during the regular season, getting to 90 points, scoring nearly 50 goals, you expect more from him. But the fact that he was neutralized is concerning. Certainly you need more from him moving forward if this team is going to have any chance to win.
Adam Vigan is with us on the program. Do you think there are any silver linings that you took away from game one that you say, okay, like the sky is not falling? Because I got in the car today and I heard Caroline talking about it, and she was like, you know, I listened to Robbie and Rex Road, and I've listened to, you know, social media, and they're acting like the sky is falling and the series is over, but there are still six more games left in this series. And I don't share that sentiment. Like, I believed going into this series, the winner of game one was going to win the series. I thought that when the Predators, you know, weathered the initial Vancouver storm, I felt really good about their chances. When they went to the break 1-0 at the first intermission, I felt great about it, saying, okay, you know, if they can get a 2-goal lead with Saros playing the way he played in the first period, they're going to win this game. If they win this game, they're going to win this series. And then Saros had his head in his ass to begin the start of the second period, which just drove me bananas. And quite frankly, I just felt like they kind of fell apart. And I don't see any silver lining to last night at all. So help me out here. Find a silver lining to me that says this series isn't over.
Well, as I said, the fact that they've never won a playoff series when losing the first game is not a good sign. And by
And
the way,
what's crazy about that stat bothers me the least out of everything that bothers me about that. I don't care that the Predators have never won a series when trailing down 0-1. Those are all different teams and everything else. Everything else bothers me more than that.
And I just want to say, because I couldn't figure this out on the last question, Philip Forsberg in the past 5 playoff years, including last night, 12 points in 21 games, 7 goals, 5 assists, 12 points in 21 games in the playoffs over the past 5 years, including last night. I thought the Predators did a decent job defensively early in the game. I think they prevented the Canucks from getting dangerous looks early on. Now, I think the Canucks eventually figured it out, but early on, the Canucks were having a hard time generating offense. So I think if the Predators can find a way to continue to do that and sustain it over the course of a full game, I think that they could be, you know, in an advantageous position. But then again, when the Canucks do get the opportunities, because they will, they need UC Saros to step up, and he did not last night. And, you know, I look at the record of UC Saros in the playoffs. When he starts, I believe now he is 3-8 in the playoffs when he starts with a, if I recall correctly, a 909 save percentage. Kind of like what you said, Jared, about the 0-12 series record. You know, we know that the Predators didn't have much of a chance against Carolina. You know, so I don't necessarily count the wins and losses as a reflection of his of his play
He
versus the
sucked in the
team.
Arizona series.
He was not great in the Arizona series. Of course, he didn't play against Colorado, but you know, I think those who look at UC Saros and wonder if he's a playoff caliber goalie, you know, they got their red meat last night again, just based on the way he played. So in front of him, I thought they did well for a good portion of the game. If they can find a way to sustain that over a longer period of time, I think they could find a way to tie the series tomorrow night.
It's crazy, to your point. I thought Carrier and Lauzon played great for about the first two periods, especially Carrier, and then they blew the game. And it's like, I mean, it's like, okay, congratulations. You played great for the first two periods, and then you completely effed everything up. So it kind of, you know, takes that away. More with Adam Vingan, 615-737-1025. We'll hit your phones later this hour. 615-737-1025. And coming up next, I'm going to ask Adam what I think is a simple question, which is, okay, let's turn the page to game two. Leave the negativity of game one. I've told you I thought they were going to win the series, and now I flipped because I thought game one was the series. But if they win game two, they're 1-1 coming back to Bridgestone Arena. More with Adam next. Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063 The Game.
Missing a chance to steal a game one like that, are you worried that that kind of thing can linger in a locker room over the next couple of days?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think this group's been resilient. We've handled adversity all year. I think to a man, we know we probably didn't play our best, but we've done a really good job of just moving straight ahead. Just forget about it, rinse it, and let's go back to work. It was a fun game. I think the emotions were high. It was physical. Had a lot of good, hard playoff games. We kind of relished in that. And like I said, we just we stepped on our toe a little bit, and you know, give them credit. They were resilient too. I mean, and they took advantage of some opportunities that self-inflicted a little bit on our side, but they played really hard, and I was really proud of our group, how we handled it early and how we kind of started, in my mind, take the game over, and we just didn't finish the job. So lesson learned. It's a long series, and can't wait for the next game.
Okay, that was Andrew Burnett after last night. And I don't know if you remember this. Adam Vingan is with us on the program. I don't know if you remember this, Vingan, but Mike and Mike back in the day used to have the BSPN translator, and they would take something like a coach or a player said, and then they would run that through the translator. And I don't know why they went away from it. I'm guessing that maybe it wasn't well-received, but what do I know? And so anywho, so I just felt like Andrew Burnett's post-game press conference last night was like this big pep talk to the team of like, oh, no, you know, it was just how the game went, and, you know, it's just a clean slate for game two, and I'm sure he's sitting there seething and yet at the same time having to kind of put on a happy smile. So let's turn our attention to game two. If the Predators are going to win game two tomorrow night in Vancouver, Adam Vingan, how are they going to do it?
It starts with getting the contributions from their top players that we have seen over the past 2 months. They need that top line to play well. It did not play well last night. They need Roman Josi to play like he has since basically after Christmas, when he thrust himself into the Norris Trophy conversation and potentially the MVP conversation. Now, he's not going to win MVP, but I wouldn't be surprised if he got some votes. They need Saros to play the way we've seen Saros play for long stretches of time and shake off the game that he had last night. Like, I know that sounds simple, get your top players to play better, but that's what it's going to take, because look at the other side. The top players on the other team played better. JT Miller was fantastic. Quinn Hughes was great. They were getting contributions from their top guys. Now, they did get 3 points from Dakota Joshua out of nowhere, but they also did get the top players on their team played the way they were supposed to play. Demko, that save he made at the beginning of the game, that was a tone setter. I mean, the Predators had him dead to right, and the way that he got across to make that save, was it on Evangelista or Novak? I can't remember who made the grade A save.
Evangelista, I think, put it in front for, it might have been Novak.
I can't remember if it was Evangelista to Novak or Novak to Evangelista.
It was Evangelista who passed. It was a beautiful pass.
Yes. So, I mean, Demko was great. So, I mean, as like I said, as simple as it is, that's what it's going to take. I mean, this team doesn't necessarily have the depth to overcome all of their top players not playing well over the course of a full game. You know, I'm also wondering about matchups and, you know, what Andrew Burnett could do to you know, as he doesn't have the last change, which does not help him, but you know, maybe try to get McCarron away from Miller as much as possible, because that didn't work out last night. You know, think about what you need to do on defense. I mean, would you put Dante Fabbro in tomorrow? You know, or would you keep Carrier in there with Lauzon?
Like, I'd keep Carrier in there. I saw Twitter saying that they should put Fabbro in there. I equally do not trust Fabbro. I mean, Carrier and Lauzon had good seasons. And if you're going to win, like, they have to play the way they played the first two periods last night, and they're going to have to play, you know, winning hockey that they played through. You know me. I thought both guys were bums, like complete and total freaking bums. And then Andrew Burnett showed up, and all of a sudden, Jeremy Lauzon turned in from a guy that I didn't even think belonged in the NHL into like a legitimate player. And for the first two periods last night, I thought Carrier and Lauzon, like, if you won the game last night, there's a chance I'd have given the game ball or whatever, you know, the game puck. You know, I'd have given that to Carrier for the way he played. And then they went and crapped away the whole game. So I'm not taking them out of the lineup. They just need to play better. To the point that you made, though, when you talked about the best players needing to play better, are we at the point with the Predators and those guys, you know who I'm talking about, Forsberg, Josi, Saros, that group, where now it's on them. Like, now it's on them. But we blame John Hines, especially me. We blame John Hines for everything. And John Hines and David Poile deserved a lot of the blame for things when they didn't go well. We blamed Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. And I think they probably deserved a fair share of the blame when things didn't go well. But at some point, you know, I'm not blaming the coach, because I think he's a good coach. And I think the only reason they're here is because he's a good coach. So I'm not putting this one on the coach. At some point, like, is this the moment where it's like, okay, it's on you guys to show us that you can compete with a team that's a good playoff team, but not, I mean, I watched New York the other day. That Vancouver team is not the New York Rangers. And so, like, that's how far you are away from competing with the big boys in the playoffs. And it's like, Vancouver's not even a big boy, and your core guys that have been here forever didn't show up last night.
Yeah, it's like you talk about with the Titans and the cycle between blaming the general manager, then blaming the coach, then blaming the quarterback. Sure. It's sort of the same thing, right? Coach is gone, can't blame him. GM is gone, both are first year, can't blame them. So the blame is certainly on the players. And yes, the spotlight is shining bright on specifically Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, and UC Soros, because those are the longest tenured core members. And I know you need more from O'Reilly and Nyquist, but they're new. I was so incredibly impressed by what I saw from Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi in the regular season. I think that especially in the second half, they were both outstanding. And, you know, that's why last night was so disappointing, was that there was a 2.5 month stretch there where those guys could not stop putting up points. And, you know, for them to be, you know, so quiet last night is, you know, I'm not going to say, like, you know, the series is over, even though the numbers, all that stuff. But, you know, it was concerning that in that big spot, after everything they had accomplished in the second half of the season, Forsberg and Josi specifically did not rise to the occasion. But I am confident that they can, and they absolutely have to tomorrow. So, I think that when you're looking at, okay, who's the pressure on, as you say, it's squarely on those three, Forsberg, Josi, and Soros.
Adam Vingan is with us on the program. If the Predators win tomorrow night in Vancouver, what does that mean for the series to you?
It means that the Predators have a chance. And, you know, I picked the Canucks to win in seven. I think you picked did you pick the Predators in six?
I picked
seven?
Them in six, yeah.
Okay, you picked them in six. And I think that was a popular sentiment, one or the other. Canucks in seven, Predators in seven, six games. So, I mean, this series is expected to go long, which means they are going to have to win a game on the road. And, I mean, I think they are capable of doing it. I think getting back home and having control of the matchups and all of that is very important. So, you know, I think this can go one of two ways. I think, you know, I think if they lose tomorrow, I think they're going to, I mean, they could win one of two at Bridgestone Arena, but I think it will be hard for them to dig out of a 2-0 hole. So not saying tomorrow's a must win, but I feel like it's pretty close.
So you think they're cooked if they don't win tomorrow night in Vancouver?
I think if they go down 2-0, I don't think they're coming back.
You know what'll happen, though, is Barry Trotz will start talking about, you know, the year I won the cup, we were down 0-2 against Columbus and we came back and you know, and I get it. I understand. You know, that's going to have to be the mentality around here as far as, oh, no, they can come back and they can do it and they can. But I'm with you. I mean, I remember when Keith Jones said on NBC after the Predators lost game two of the cup final, and he looked into the camera and he said to the fans in Nashville, you guys, I know you're new to this, but you're okay. You know, you're going back to your own building down 0-2, blah, 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 whatever. And like that sentiment rang with me, which is, hey, you know what? It's okay. You go back to Bridgestone Arena, you even the series up, and the Predators ended up doing that in that cup final. I don't think the Predators are going to do that. Like, I think that if the Predators lose tomorrow, they will lose one of the two games at Bridgestone, and it's over. And so if you had to say, like, what percent chance, I don't know if I said this earlier today or not, but if you were to ask me what percent chance would you give the Predators after saying that they were going to win the series on Friday, saying they were going to win the series at 9:06 last night, I'd give you about like a 10% chance maybe. Like, and if they lose tomorrow, I think I'd drop it down to 5. I mean, I'm just, again, I try not to harp. I said we were going to talk this segment on game two, but here I am, and I feel like I'm, you know, still mad about last night.
Which is understandable, because the Predators had the game in their grasp. They had the game in their grasp. They were not blown out of the building. It was two goals in 12 seconds, the fastest two goals scored in Canucks playoff history, and it completely rattled them.
Do you know what game last night reminded me of? Like, and this is probably, of all the Predators playoff games, the one that sticks in my craw the most of all the playoff games over the years. You want to take a guess on it? Which game did last night remind me of that sticks in my craw the most of all the Predators playoff games since we've been doing this, which goes back to that game one that they blew in Chicago in 2015.
Oh, man. Part of me wants to say game seven against Winnipeg.
So it wasn't game seven. I think it was game three.
It was the first game in Winnipeg where they had the big lead and then they allowed them to come back.
Just freaking blew it. The Predators had lost home ice in game one. I think it was Johansson who scored in game two in overtime to, you know, end up evening the series at one, but you lost home ice. And I think the Predators had like a 3-0 lead, and Winnipeg knocked in four goals in like a 5-minute period. And it went from, wow, the Predators are about to take control of this series, to crap. And that's how I felt last night in that 12-second span was, hey, the Predators are going to be able to hang on. Like, they went on the power play up 2-1, and I'm like, if they score here, this game's over. And all of a sudden, within 12 seconds, it's like, oh, crap, here we go again. And I, of that entire Winnipeg series, I mean, I think if the Predators had won that series, they'd have won the Cup. And of that entire series, I think that that's the game that porked them the most, including all the home games they lost, 1-5-7. I think that was the one that hurt the most because they had the lead, they had the game in their hands, and they blew it. And that's what last night reminded me of.
Yes. So they were up 3-0 at the end of the first period in that game, and then gave up four goals in the second period, but three came in like a 3-minute span. So that's a really good point by you, now that I think about that. Like, I remember being at that game and, you know, having to tear up a lot of my early story because I thought the Predators were going to coast to a win, but maybe I should have known better. I mean, the Predators had it last night. They absolutely did. Even if they didn't play their best, they played well enough to, you know, to potentially steal a game in Vancouver and change things dramatically. But all it took was 12 seconds, and Now it's going to take a much better effort to regroup.
Adam Vingan joins us, as always, on the program. Vingan, great stuff. Hopefully, I was thinking about, you know, well, if we have Adam on tomorrow, then, you know, it'll probably be a much peachier tune. But, I'm still mad about last night, which I think I'm, like, I don't want to say that, you know, I'm entitled as a, you know, whatever. I do whatever I want. But I do feel like the day after is the day you can be mad, and then the next day it's like, okay, everybody's got to turn their attention to game two. So with that, it is what it is. Adam Vingan, as always. Adam, great stuff. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Jared.
Yep, Adam Vingan joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. If you want to weigh in again, that's 615-737-1025. Okay, I said we'd turn our attention to game two, and it's just one thing that is really bothering me. We'll do that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Missing a chance to steal a game one like that, are you worried that that kind of thing can linger in a locker room over the next couple of days?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think this group's been resilient. We've handled adversity all year. I think to a man, we know we probably didn't play our best. But we've done a really good job of just moving straight ahead. Just forget about it, rinse it, and let's go back to work. It was a fun game. I think the emotions were high. It was physical. Had a lot of good, hard playoff games. We kind of relished in that. And like I said, we stepped on our toe a little bit. And, you know, give them credit. They were resilient too. I mean, they took advantage of some opportunities that self-inflicted a little bit on our side. But they played really hard. And I was really proud of our group, how we handled it early, and how we kind of started, in my mind, take the game over, and we just didn't finish the job. So lesson learned. It's a long series, and can't wait for the next game.
Okay, there you go. That was Bruno last night after the game. And I am struggling with last night's loss. I mean, it is really up my craw. And it's up there as far as just blown opportunities. It's up there to me. With that Winnipeg game, they were up 3-0, gave up 4 second period goals, and Vingan and I were talking about it. And it's up there with 2015 Game 6 Chicago, where Game 7 would have been here at Bridgestone Arena, and the Predators had a lead in that one and similarly blew it. And it is hard for me to believe in the Predators after last night. I want to believe in the Predators, but I am so disappointed in how the star players played that it's hard for me to get over. And so I brought this up again with Adam, and I was actually looking for the clip earlier today. I just didn't have it, but Keith Jones was, I think he's the GM of the Flyers now, Ian. I think that's right.
Yes.
Keith Jones, who I loved on TV. I have no idea if Keith Jones is, you know, a good GM or not. I guess he's doing well in Philadelphia. But Keith Jones was on NBC, and he told all the Preds fans after the Preds went 2-0, down 2-0 in Pittsburgh, as they were doing the breakdown at the desk on NBC, he said that it was fine for Preds fans that have never kind of done the playoff hockey thing before to lose game one and game two, and they'll go back into their building and it'll be okay. You know, get this series tied up at Bridgestone Arena and on you go. And Mike Fisher on the then Fox Sports Tennessee, now Bally Sports, Mike Fisher on the local post game show was like, oh no, we're not done here. Down 2-0, we're going to get back in the series. And they did. I just don't have that feeling here. I just don't have it. I'd love to have it, but I don't. Ty says, all those goals against Winnipeg came on a five-minute major. I'll have to take your word for it. I know it was a disaster. That I know. Jonathan says, I think not having Pekka-Rinne in net with a 2-1 lead is the difference between 2017 and this year. Well, yes and no. I mean, Rinne was a puddle in 2018. I think he got pulled like four times in the playoffs. Maybe even more than that. So I would be careful about that, about saying, oh, well, Rinne would have done better. The difference is that when it comes to Pekka-Rinne or UC Saros, Pekka-Rinne is not going to win all the time. But I know I can win with Pekka-Rinne. With UC Saros, the more playoff games he plays and the more playoff games he loses, the more it creeps into my head of, can I win with UC Saros as my goalie? And I don't know the answer to that. And it's, again, Barry Trotz, you know, there is a time frame on all of this, right? So, you know, Barry went into, you know, when they lost that game 9-2 to Dallas, and Barry was basically like, all right, you know, if they don't play better, I'm going to trade the goalie. And then they played better. And then they got back in the playoffs, and Barry was like, you're going to have to blow me away in order to trade the goalie, and nobody did. Well, if the goalie proves to Barry Trotz that he can't win a playoff series and he has the performance that he had last night, he continues that in his playoff series. Good goalies are supposed to steal playoff games and playoff series, not just do the average and get by. And last night, again, the 1.66 goals over expectation for Saros, he blew the game last night. And if you're Barry Trotz, I think you got to sit there up in the box and think to yourself, can I win with this guy? And if I can't win with this guy, then when it's draft time, he's going to be somewhere else. And instead of that huge package and everything else, I'll probably end up getting a first-round pick for him, which is not nothing, but it's certainly not what they were asking for at the deadline. But this is, again, the playoffs, this is what makes and breaks careers and Hall of Fames and all kinds of stuff. Eli Manning's going to the Hall of Fame. Why? Because Eli Manning lit it up twice in the playoffs. Phillip Rivers might not. Austin from Clarksville says, do you go to Lincoln? And if they go down 0-2, I would. I'd think about it. Part of me says no, because Saros is the girl that brought you to the dance. And it's like, okay, you know, if you lose with Saros in this playoff series, then we know, right? Like, we
plus
know.
It's how you lose. You know, what's the game look like?
Well, let's say he has the same performance he had last night. I think I'd do it.
Yeah. I'd probably need to see worse.
Worse than 1.6 goals over expectation?
Yeah, there's really only one soft in there last night.
One soft one cost you the game.
Yeah, but it's not like he was, like, ridiculous. He wasn't the Gorgiev from Colorado.
Oof. He sucks. I mean, I think people, like, because they won the championship with Darcy Kemper, it's like, oh, well, you can win with anybody in debt. It's like, no.
Not always.
Not anybody. That guy, he sucks. All right, I'm going to end today's show on I think a very positive note and a very positive Titans NFL draft story. And we will do that next. Stillman and Company, order 2516 for the game. Couple of draft notes for you. Joe Alt will join Stillman and Company on Wednesday. We're still figuring out the time for all of that, but it is official. We will have Joe Alt on Wednesday ahead of the NFL draft. And former NFL GM Mark Domenech will join us on Thursday. We'll have him ahead of the draft. So we'll get kind of his thoughts on all of this and whatnot. So we are loaded up not only for playoff coverage, but also for draft coverage around here, which is an incredibly exciting time, but also, for me, a very anxious time trying to figure out, okay, you know, how much preds, how much draft, how much preds, how much draft. But as always, we'll find a way. So this morning I was listening to old Floyd Reese Draft Academy segments from back in the day. Like, you really got to be back in the day to remember this. And I stumbled upon this cut. And I figured, with all the angst of the loss last night for the Predators, let's end this show on a positive note with Floyd explaining how the Titans stumbled upon Javon Curse in 1999.
The Javon Curse draft. We loved Javon. I mean, we loved him. And I really thought Javon would go in the first, you know, five, six, seven picks. And so, you know, I watched him, and he got past seven, and you're thinking, wow, you know, is there a chance? So we started calling these other teams. You know, would you be interested in a trade? Would you be interested in a trade? And we just couldn't find anybody that we could sell on a trade. So he keeps moving down, and he keeps moving down, and now he's at 15. And in my mind, this will make your draft. If you can get this guy, it will make the entire draft. And so I called Richie McKay, who was at Tampa Bay, who was a GM at Tampa at that time. And I said, Richie, I said, I want to move up to your spot. I said, I'll give you virtually whatever you want. I said, I got to get there. He said, no. He said, I think I'm going to make the pick. Well, then the obvious thing you say is, oh, geez. Well, okay, who are you going to take? He said, I'm going to take a defensive lineman. And I went, oh, no. I said, who are you going to take? He says, well, I'm going to take, I think it was Booger McFarland. I said, McFarland? He goes, yeah. I said, oh, okay, bye.
So that's the story of how they ended up with Javon Curse. And again, I mean, this is the time of year. He loved the playoffs, too. I mean, make no mistake about that. He loved the playoffs. In fact, when he got sick and they told me that his kids were going over to watch the playoffs with, because he used to always, oh, I don't watch it. But he really, really got into the playoffs with the Preds. But it's draft time, and it always makes me think about the wise wisdom and everything else. Wise wisdom, whatever, that we had from the old man. That's going to do it for us. Stillman and Company, game two tomorrow. We'll be in better positive spirits. The Commodore Hour is next. And, Ian, I believe we have Preds coverage starting at 7 o'clock after the Commodore Hour.
That is correct.
There you go. Enjoy that, Stillman and Company. We'll be in a better mood tomorrow at 2.